on this episode of Still Loading, I'm not afraid of the darkness. Hey guys, and welcome to the newest episode of Still Loading. It's me, Josh, back again, and today I've brought my first female guest on to talk about one of our favorite game series. Sarah, say hello.
Hello.
Today we will be talking about Kingdom Hearts. The first one, specifically. The series, that's a long way away. But yeah, so Sarah, first tell us about your first interactions with the series.
Well, I first actually got into it because of Chain of Memories. I picked up a used version in GameStop, and then I went back and got the first one a little while later. So that was the beginning for me.
And then you were hooked ever since then?
Oh yeah, definitely hooked. This is really one of my big video games.
How long is this love affair going on with this series?
Probably about 13 years, I'm going to say. Because it was when... it was when Chain of Memories came out, so obviously the first one had been out for a while by that point.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think the first one was out in 02, Chain of Memories, I believe, was 03. You know what? Let's do the totally unprofessional thing, and you can hear all the clicking and everything.
Yeah, because this year is the 15th anniversary of Kingdom Hearts, specifically March 28th.
Oh shit, you actually have the date memorized too?
No, I know that because that's when they are coming out with the 1.5 plus 2.5 reload.
I just pre-ordered that.
I've had it pre-ordered for a while.
I got it pre-ordered from the Square Enix site, so that way I can get... It's a special edition thing.
Yeah,
on
with
there.
The pin.
So Kingdom Hearts 2002. That I knew off the top of that. I wasn't here to talk about the rest of the series, so I didn't do as much research as I probably should have.
Yeah.
Chain of Memories is 04, and then Kingdom Hearts 2 is 05, so... That game alone is over 10 years older. That's coming up at 11. That's nuts.
Yeah, 2 was a good one.
Kingdom Hearts came out in 2002. It was developed by Square Enix. The director is Tetsuya Nomura. So let's go into some, just some of the background with it. One of the more interesting things is how it was created. So the series was created by a couple of chance events, two random encounters. The first one was the series creator, Tetsuya Nomura, overheard a conversation between a Square Enix exec, Shinji Hashimoto, and the Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi. I am butchering these names. And what he could make out of the conversation was that, and I quote, quote-unquote, Mickey Mouse would have been great, but we can't use him. And as soon as he heard that, he just jumped in and said, I'm interested. Whatever it is, I'm in. The game was inspired, because the reason he even jumped in was because he wanted to create a game that was inspired from Super Mario 64. In fact, the game, Kingdom Hearts, came from Super Mario 64, because after he saw it, he loved the idea of a fully immersive 3D world that people could go around and explore. He told his colleagues about this, that he wanted to make a game like it, and they all said, but Mario's already a huge, a world-famous character. Unless we had one as well, it would be impossible. So when Nomura heard this, when they're talking about Mickey Mouse, he wanted... That was his opening. He could make that game he wanted to with Disney's characters.
Yeah, originally, Disney wanted Donald Duck to be the protagonist, and Square wanted Mickey Mouse. But they didn't think that was going to be the best protagonist for this series, so they came up with Sora.
Well, to kind of backtrack a little bit, the second chance event was that Hashimoto unwillingly stepped into an elevator with a Disney exec. At the time, Disney and Square worked in the same office building, and so since Hashimoto, the exec, who gave Nomura, there's a lot of names here, but Nomura the chance to do this, he pitched the whole collaboration directly to Disney. So like you were saying, Disney wanted Donald Duck to be the protagonist, but then Square wanted Mickey Mouse to be.
Yeah, so Nomura felt neither would work, so he came up with his own character in Disney's style, and that's how we got Sora. His gloves and his shoes were callbacks to Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, because his gloves were white, his shoes yellow, pants red,
yep.
That kind of thing. So let's talk a little bit about the story. I think that's what jumps out to most fans about this game. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The story is really what brought in all the fans, because they've got Final Fantasy's typical immersive story.
What personally I liked about it was a little bit darker than what I was expecting, because I remember when I was a kid and the commercials came on that I was like, really? You're going to take Final Fantasy and mash it up with with Disney? I'm like, that's not going to work. Why would you? They don't seem to fit. And I was wrong. I was really wrong. It worked really well.
Yeah, I think you were talking about the commercials, and I remembered I used to see the commercials for Chain of Memories on TV. And what got me really interested was that song, The Simple and Clean.
Simple and Clean. The theme for almost the whole thing.
Yeah.
Or series, I can't speak.
Yeah, so that's what got me really interested, and that's why when I saw it, I picked it up.
And so the story, I guess, to kind of give an overview of what happens in the first Kingdom Hearts, and just in case anyone's not aware of a 15-year-old spoiler, fucking spoilers, assholes. All right, so the game starts off with Sora and his friends on Destiny Islands, and they desperately want to escape. Sora starts out in a dream of him, on the stained glass tile, windows, but they're all, floors that you can walk on, and that's kind of the tutorial of the game. So, and that's where you also it's the tutorial of the game, and that's also where you choose your base stats. Like, do you prefer magic? Do you prefer attack? Do you prefer defense? And I also really liked it because of the Disney princesses on the floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was always a big selling point for me. Like, Disney princesses were a big part of my life.
Have you been a Disney file for a while?
Or? Oh, yeah, definitely.
How that rhymed.
Definitely since I was a child.
What would be... So, alright, we'll get back to the story, but what would be one of your... out of the worlds that they chose in this game, what would be your favorite Disney world? Or Disney setting that they chose?
Ooh. I really like Hollow Bastion because Beauty and the Beast was always my favorite movie.
Was that
movie.
Really based off Beauty and the Beast? It didn't seem like it.
Parts of it were like the library and parts of the castle, but as you can see in 2, it wasn't really meant to be like Beauty and the Beast world.
Yeah,
it felt more like Hollow Bastion was a bunch of fragments of different worlds, and Belle and the Beast just kind of got sucked into that one.
It makes sense with the story. Awesome segue back to it. So he has that dream where that's where you choose all your stats. It gives you the tutorials, and you're like, this is how you jump. This is how you herp and derp. And so he wakes up, and then that's where you explore the island, and you meet Kairi and Riku.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Riku.
Oh, Riku.
This little bitch.
Yeah. Gotta... You love to hate him.
Well, alright. I didn't actually hate him. I actually kind of like him as a character, but don't like... I actually think the voice acting is a little weak on him.
Yeah.
Personally?
I can't remember exactly who Riku's voice actor was. I can remember a lot of the others, but he is not one I can remember.
I'll have you know, I have the list right here. David Gallagher was Riku.
Oh.
David Gallagher is famous for the show Seventh Heaven.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Because I could remember a lot of them, Lance Bass as Sephiroth.
Lance Bass, oh yeah. We will get to... That is a whole segment I want to talk about. Just what is the word I'm looking for? The pedigree of talent they got for this game is surprisingly high. Despite all of them not being voice actors, it was still surprisingly high.
Yeah.
So you meet Kairi, his friend, who's voiced by Hayden Panettiere.
Yeah,
who
Disney.
She's Disney royalty. She's a singer. She was also the daughter of the coach of Coach What's-His-Face in Remember the Titans.
I don't remember. That movie.
What? Yeah, I'm not even going to break up this cinema sin. We're done.
Not
bad. Bring up. In any case, never seen the... What?
I've never seen it.
Okay. So anyway, Remember the Titans off the table, apparently. but so... She's the voice of Kairi, and she wants you to basically you, Riku, and her are going to build a raft so you can get off this island. You want to see the other worlds. Yeah. And then you meet some creepy mother right at, like, in that one hidden thicket with a door to the other world.
Yeah, that was interesting. The guy in the brown cloak, and you're like, how'd this guy get here?
That is actually what first hooked me on the game, because I remember when I was playing, I'm like,
creepy dudes in cloaks.
Well, you know, the shoe fits, but, you know. But like, the mystery behind it, you know, it captured my imagination. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what, like, this is not something I expected out of a Disney-related product, you know?
Yeah, and they definitely keep on coming with the mysteries throughout the rest of the series.
One of their biggest, I would say their most common threads of storytelling elements is giving you a lot of information that you don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And then explaining it out later on, which is really cool, but infuriating at the same time.
It's infuriating because they are explaining everything 15 years later.
Yes.
It's way too long to wait.
Well, it's not even that. It's like when, perfect example, I mean, we will do Kingdom Hearts 2 on another day. You and I, you're coming back, sure. I hope you know. But, like, the beginning of it is just, like, a whole bunch of stuff that if you don't play Chain of Memories, you're not going to understand. Yeah. And they give you a whole bunch of information that you're just like, oh, wait, what?
Yeah, okay, and playing backwards was interesting for me because I kind of saw where all the information I got in Chain of Memories came from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, you have beaten Kingdom Hearts 1.
Yeah, today. Today is the first day that I've beaten it in 13 years.
But you have beaten it before this, too. Also,
I haven't, actually.
Really? Okay.
I watched my brother beat it. My brother's 7 years younger than me, and he was able to get on the PlayStation before me, and he beat it. I watched it, so I'm like, what's the point?
Well, now you have it. Now you got to experience
now
the whole thing.
Now I have the joy of beating the game.
I have the power! But, okay, so then so you build the raft. I mean, very long story short with that, because, like, we could go into detail about you had to collect the coconuts and the fish.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like,
it's a lot of needless
15 hours at minimum of story.
Oh, yeah.
More if you spend
time. Well, there's an achievement for you to beat the game in less than 15 hours. It's difficult, but I made it up to the second-to-last world at 16 hours. I think I was talking to you about that earlier, like before, off mic or whatever.
I think I was there at 20, and then I spent a lot of time just leveling up.
So you build the raft, and then you basically, right when it's ready to go, you finish, basically the first day you get all the supplies to build the raft, and then that's where you see that weird hooded figure, which, do you think that's, I mean, it's jumping ahead in the story, but do you think that's Ansem?
I think it's probably Ansem.
Spoilers for later games, but we won't do that. That'll be for Kingdom Hearts 2.
I think that the figure was meant to be Ansem at the time.
Okay. That's what I thought,
because I wonder about a lot.
Because the voice I could have sworn matched, but I could be wrong, because you don't actually see his face.
Yeah, it's a little weird, and the cloak's kind of a strange color that you don't see again.
Mm.
But I think for that game, it was meant to be Ansem. But sometimes I do wonder how far in advance they actually planned the series.
Yeah. But, so that's the first day, and then the second day you get all supplies, you know, you get food and whatnot. And as you're ready to head out, and, like, so you get all supplies and you go to bed, and it's the only time you ever hear Sora's mother.
Yeah.
Sora, dinner's ready. Sora! Mm-hmm.
We never hear from her again.
She's never heard from again.
I mean, could be because of the events that happen directly after that, but
could be. But, so what ends up happening is that then all of a sudden your world's overgrown, whatever the hell you want to call it, with Heartless. I mean, you don't know they're Heartless at the time, but they're the Heartless. Now, for those who have not played this game, the Heartless are the main, like, your villains of the game. Not the main villain, not the one controlling all of them, but the villain of the game.
Yeah, they're the enemies you fight throughout the game.
Exactly. And there's different kinds of Heartless, and all the Heartless are people who have lost their hearts, people mm-hmm. who've lost their soul, they have lost their way.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. The concept of the Heartless.
I love... That's the other thing that captured my imagination. Even the character's design of it.
Oh, yeah. Like, all of them, like, are so different and look so interesting. When I was replaying Hollow Bastion, the Wyvern Heartless just looks super cool.
I hate them.
I actually don't mind fighting them. They are much easier than the ones that, like, disappear and reappear. They just fly, so
see, I don't like them because what always happens is they go off the edge and then you fall off the edge.
Oh, yeah, that is the worst.
You have to lure them to corners so that way they don't do that. But, so you, what happens is your world gets destroyed. You fight this big monster Heartless at the, after on Destiny Island. And that's kind of like your first boss fight. And he's stupid easy. He doesn't really do much. You just kind of attack his wrists. And he's like, no, I can't jerk off anymore. And then he goes away.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not too bad. It's kind of funny how his counterpart in 2 is a lot harder, it feels like.
It's really weird. Really? Oh, yeah.
I've played 2 a lot more than I've played 1. And I always have problems with that thing.
See, I haven't played 2 in, like, 3 or 4 years now, so I'm going to be replaying it completely for before we record that next episode. But so you fight him, and then you end up in one of the staple worlds of the series, Traverse Town. I'm pretty sure it shows up in
Traverse Town. I think that they've mentioned it shows up when people need it.
Yeah.
So
I love Traverse Town. I love the theme for Traverse Town.
It's a good theme.
Gets stuck in your head really fast. But you end up in Traverse Town, and the cutscene in between this is where you meet Donald and Goofy. And thank God they did not make Donald the main protagonist.
I would have killed somebody. I can't play as Donald. I can't even, like, let him live.
I mean, if for anyone who's been on the internet for the past 10 years, you've seen how many memes of how useless Donald is. And it's true. That's not bullshit. That's 100% true.
Donald's the worst.
Do you have any specific stories? Anything? Any gripes you'd like to share? This is a therapy session to get out your Donald anger.
I mean, at this point, I don't like him. I don't like his attitude. I don't like his voice. Like, I know he's a beloved classic character.
He is obnoxious.
But he's so mean and just so rude. I'll take Goofy, who is nice, if a bit silly. I'll take him, but I still just sometimes in battle they die, and I'm like, you can stay dead.
Goofy's a champ, though.
Oh, yeah.
Goofy wrecks everything. Yeah. I love it. Donald's useless. He'll heal Goofy all day long, but as soon as you need health, it's Goofy that heals you.
I do have to say, it felt like in this playthrough, Donald did heal me a lot more than he used to. He was always like, Sora, and it's like, but I just healed myself.
It's always because you're so used to having to rely on yourself that you try to heal yourself, and you hit it, and then you get double healed.
It's too late, Donald. I already learned how to live without you.
Yeah. So you're in Traverse Town, and you basically meet up. I mean, I'm not going to go over that boring section of trying to find each other, the cat and mouse between Donald and Goofy. Like, where are you guys trying to find? That was annoying. But you end up finally meeting Donald and Goofy, and meeting Leon, also known as Squall from Final Fantasy VIII, Yuffie and Aeris, and Cid. All characters from, with the exception of Leon or / Squall from Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, that was interesting, the inclusion of Leon instead. But I guess that makes sense when you think about how originally they wanted to have Riku from
Final 10. Yeah.
They wanted to have her instead. And then it would have been a slightly more diverse cast.
But a little bit more confusing, considering that there's another character named Riku.
That always confused me because I hadn't played Final Fantasy X. So I was... When I played 2, I'm like, why is her name Riku? Why is his name Riku?
Yeah, so Riku from Final 10 Riku, not from Kingdom Hearts Riku.
Yeah.
Riku from FF10, she shows up with the rest of her squad in Kingdom Hearts 2. She shows up with the rest of her squad, the Gullwings, but as almost like fairies,
it seems like. Yeah, it was weird.
Excuse me. So, anyway, so after Traverse Town, you pretty much, without... we can go into details of the individual worlds, but I feel like that's just going into a bunch of unnecessary, superfluous detail.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much after this, the plot remains the same. We get our mission to travel the worlds and seal up the keyholes and stop the darkness that is overflowing into the worlds.
Exactly.
So, we travel to all these different Disney-themed worlds and beat up some Heartless.
The Disney worlds in this game are as follows: Alice in Wonderland, Hercules, Tarzan, Aladdin, The Nightmare Before Christmas, Pinocchio. Ugh. Yeah, I didn't like that one. But you only get to play in the whale. You only get to play in Monstro, so you're running around in his belly. It's
awful, and that one's just awful story-wise, because Riku's just there, like, yeah, I'm kidnapping Pinocchio. And I'm just what are you like, gonna just do about take it? Him. I don't want him.
No one likes Pinocchio.
I didn't like Pinocchio.
Little Mermaid, which actually is my least favorite world. Not because of Little Mermaid, but because I hate fighting underwater. Oh,
yeah, like, fighting underwater is the worst. Like, suddenly changing everything you knew. But today...
They streamlined it, to be fair.
It felt less terrible than I remembered it, actually. And also, after playing the final fight with Ansem, all of a sudden I understood why they had that. Because you have to use those controls again.
But you use that in Peter Pan. The other world, the final world, besides kind of Beauty and the Beast, is Neverland.
I don't like Peter Pan much either.
I actually really like that world, except the camera is bullshit.
The camera is kind of bullshit in the entire game, actually. Like, when I was playing, I'm just like, what is with this camera? I keep getting stuck, I can't see, I don't like it.
Now, this is a really random, very specific question. Do you play with the camera inversed or not? I'm not talking about up and down. Like, when I push it up, I expect me to look up. When I push it down, I expect me to look down. The way they have it set as a default is when you push right, you actually look left. Because if you think about a camera behind you, when you physically move it right, you're going to look left.
Yeah, that's how I have it set up, and I keep forgetting to change it. I kept thinking to myself, just go into the settings, just change it.
I was so mad when I first started playing. Like, why is it when I move it right he looks left? I don't like that.
Yeah.
And I get the physics of it when you have a physical camera behind
but
your character.
But it feels weird.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel natural.
I don't like it.
I hated that. That was one of my biggest pet peeves.
Camera
now, granted,
is a pet peeve for that game.
It definitely, especially in tight spaces. Neverland, like we said before, I also thought Alice in Wonderland got a little wonky at times. Hercules was fine. A lot of the spaces actually in Little Mermaid world, Little Mermaid's world,
that got
in
really
Atlantica,
annoying.
Because of all the tight tunnels and everything.
I went back there to get some things, and it was just awful, like trying to see anything and trying to figure out where I'm going.
Yeah.
I also don't really like, I got so used to new games, they always have a mini map. Mm-hmm. And I'm so used to a mini map. And this game doesn't have it.
You have to memorize everything.
And it really confused me. And I'm like, I'm not Axel, I don't have it memorized.
So I don't even remember that Axel. Is that a character trait of Axel's?
That's his catchphrase. It's got it memorized.
Really?
Really.
See, I haven't played, and like,
we'll
I've played, there. Okay, so I've played Kingdom Hearts 1 and beaten it four times.
Okay.
I've played it a lot, so I know this game really well. Kingdom Hearts 2, I've only beaten once.
So we're like the opposite. This is your ground, but when we get to 2, it's like, this is where I thrive.
I love Kingdom Hearts 1. And I love 2 when I played it. Now, slight disclaimer, I've not played the rest of the series, but that is the plan for this.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to continue playing the games, and when I beat them, hopefully we can record another podcast, depending on schedules and all this
March
other stuff.
March 28th, you will have all of the games on one disc.
I will.
So you might as well just play them all there. I have to say, Birth by Sleep is probably my favorite in the series.
I'm excited to try it out.
I just love it. Like, everything about it is great.
So to wrap up the story, it's really, trust me, in the other episodes, sidetracked, but we stayed on relative topic, I'm not worried about it. To wrap up the story, after you go to all the worlds, you go to the final world of Hollow Bastion, and that's kind of like like you said before, a Beauty and the Beast kind of world, but it's not really, it's kind of like a conglomerate of all other worlds.
Story-wise.
And it makes sense. It makes sense story-wise because all the worlds are getting destroyed. So they're all kind of going towards the heart, the Kingdom Hearts, the heart of all worlds.
Yeah.
Now, Hollow Bastion is not that hard, but it's close to it. So it makes sense that it's appearing all near it.
Mm-hmm.
I really actually like the character of Beast in this world.
Beast
this
is
game.
Always great.
I like, in a kind of cliche way, but I liked how the fact, like, they wrote around it, like, his heart was... He loved Belle so much that his heart was too strong to die after he got killed by the Heartless, after his body was taken.
Yeah, I think that that makes a lot of sense, actually.
Super interesting. From the movie, yeah. And so, you play through that, and then you... I guess one thing we didn't explain is all the villains of all these worlds are the villains. And so, the way they kind of... The Heartless are controlled by a group of villains, and all the villains are your favorite villains from the Disney movies, and it's all those villains from the worlds that they've given us. So you have Jafar from Aladdin,
you get Hades from Hercules,
you get Oogie Boogie from A Nightmare Before Christmas,
Ursula from The Little Mermaid,
you get Maleficent, you get Captain Hook, you get actually, there's no one from Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, because the Queen of Hearts isn't really a villain. It's like she's she is crazy. Kind of the antagonist of that world, but she isn't the villain. She isn't part of their council.
Yeah, their council of evilness or whatever.
Yeah.
Ursula, I think we got everyone from that. There's no one in Monstro, because that's like, what else is in there? Pinocchio, what are you gonna do?
Yeah.
So you, as you defeat more of the council one by one, all that's left is Maleficent. I guess her world, I guess Hollow Bastion is a combination of Beauty and the Beast and Sleeping Beauty then.
It's pretty interesting because I know that Hollow Bastion is supposed to be Squall and Yuffie and Aerith
and Sids.
That is their world.
Do you think it's also Kairi's world?
It is. Oh, that's a big spoiler.
No, it's okay. No, I already figured that out.
Okay.
Because you don't have to play the other games, because, like I said, I did not play the other games, and I figured this out. The reason is, Kairi is a flashback earlier on in the game, and you see her talking to her grandmother in the library of Hollow Bastion, and I recognized it. I'm like, aha. And earlier, in the beginning of the game, we didn't say this before, but if you talk to some of the villagers on your home island, they say... Or no, it's a flashback when you're still on your home island, and they say, hey, did you hear about that girl who just showed up, like, out of nowhere? Makes sense, because, like, we know their world got destroyed, therefore they, you know, Cid, Leon, and Cid, Yuffie, and Aerith all went to one world. Kairi just ended up on the Destiny Islands.
Yeah, this is actually explained a lot in Birth by Sleep.
Really?
Because she shows up as, like, a little girl in that when you visit Hollow Bastion. And you see a lot of other characters there. Birth by Sleep really explains a lot of different things.
Don't spoil too much more. Yeah. I mean, I guess that kind of... I mean, I guess it's a minor spoiler for Birth by Sleep, but not really, I guess.
No,
Because we figured it out from this.
You figured it out from looking at the thing. But now, yeah, they definitely put that in Birth by Sleep, along with some other things. Like, you wonder, why didn't we go to Snow White or Cinderella?
I did play a little bit of Birth by Sleep, and I did make it to Snow White.
So you know that those are, like, the first few worlds.
Yes.
And so then you kind of know why they've...
No, I don't know why they picked those yet.
Oh,
but
no,
I'll figure
no,
it out.
There's not really a reason,
oh.
But it just explains why those aren't ones that you have to save, since we save, like, three of the princesses, and then they get kidnapped.
Well, stop telling me these things. I'll see it all there.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. There's a lot of very interesting things.
So then you defeat Maleficent, and Riku, who's been kind of like... Like, when you guys all get separated, Riku kind of goes his own way and kind of goes with the dark side of everything. Like, he joins in with Maleficent unknowingly.
He thinks that that's the best way to save Kairi, who has lost her heart, and she's unresponsive for
and
the
Sora
entire game.
And Sora is trying to save Kairi a different way.
Yep.
So what ends up happening is Ansem convinces him, which I actually really liked what they did with Ansem, because with Ansem in this game, before you knew him as the leader of Hollow Bastion, who was studying the Heartless, and he was trying to find a way to cure them, essentially.
Yeah.
And then, like I said spoilers already, but you find out he's the actual, like, antagonist of this game. He's your final boss. He's the one that kind of unlocked the world. No, he's not the one, because he's the one that discovered... He gave in to the darkness and becomes the main antagonist of the game.
Yeah. For me, it's a little weird because, like I said, I play
you know
a
more.
Lot of the newer games, like Kingdom Hearts 2 and Birth by Sleep, and they also talk a lot about that.
Well, I like I said, I did beat Kingdom Hearts 2, and there's a big plot twist with Ansem,
but we'll get there.
I don't want to spoil that for this episode.
We'll get there.
So Ansem convinces Riku to give in to pure darkness, eternal darkness, or whatever.
Yeah.
And Riku does, and Ansem literally just possesses him.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's one moment when Riku's able to hold Ansem back from essentially killing Sora, I believe, right? I remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And oh, it was after. So Riku, and so after you beat Maleficent, you go up to find the heart of Hollow Bastion. It was supposed to be the heart to all darkness, but you find out later that it isn't.
Yeah.
And Riku, possessed by Ansem, is there. Now, Sora does not know this yet, and Sora's like, what have you done with Riku? Like, that's not him. And then you fight him, which I remember was a bitch of a fight.
Yeah, fighting Riku like that is pretty hard. That took me a couple tries. I think I actually... Oh, I just equipped, like, a different amulet.
Did you know... We talked about this before, that Tinkerbell makes that fight 10 times. Well,
yes.
You can't do it on that fight, but other fights, Tinkerbell makes fights 10 times easier.
I think you can
easier.
Do it on that fight, but there's a lot of fights that you can't do it in. Like, the last fights with Ansem,
you
they're kind of weird.
You can't do any summons in that fight, I noticed.
You could do it in the first one where you're just on the beach. But, yeah, that... Honestly, I use summons more in this playthrough than I've ever used
Tinkerbell's amazing.
In the series.
She heals
ever.
You? I love it.
It was great. That was a great tip. Thank you.
Good strategy for those like us who never use summons in all of our playthroughs. Tinkerbell heals you consistently when you summon her. Use her as frequently as possible, especially on boss fights.
If you're a noob like me.
So then you fight Riku, or Ansem possessing Riku, and but because you beat him, the world kind of becomes unstable and a bunch of Heartless come, and so you have to escape.
I think
No, Sora unlocks his...
Yeah, because what happened is they have all the power of all the princesses, Seven Hearts of Light, except for Kairi's, because it turns out Kairi's heart was inside Sora's the entire time. So
doesn't really make all... Now, without spoiling anything, does that get explained more in any of the other games? You could just say yes or no, and that if it says maybe, that's fine, too.
I'm going to say maybe, because there's a lot of stuff I need to think about.
Okay.
But for this game,
they don't really explain it too well. Like, I guess, like, they're such good friends, / they, like, love each other, which even though they're, like 13,
so it's
weird. I feel
like there could be a reason, and I feel like they're going to get to that reason in Kingdom Hearts 3, personally.
Okay.
Either they will address it in Kingdom Hearts 3, or it's never going to be talked about.
And
but there's
just, that's
certain
the thing
reasons
take.
That I believe this, and we can get to that when you play the other games.
So Sora's Keyblade, which... We never even talked about the freaking Keyblades.
Oh, man, we didn't. The Keyblade's the most important part of the series.
It's like what he holds throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, the Keyblade.
Which that was another thing. I say this phrase all the time, what captures my imagination. That was one of the other big things.
Because it was so cool, because it was so, like, not customizable, but it was so changeable, because all the different worlds you got a different form.
And the idea of just, like, a key that's also a blade is just really kind of mystical in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what we expected from the people who gave us the gun sword.
Yeah, well, he was gonna, remember, Sora's original model, he was gonna have a chainsaw sword.
Oh, yeah!
Like, if that's not 80s, I don't know what is.
It was really funny.
But Sora's weapon is the Keyblade, and he's the Keyblade, he's the chosen one, he's the master of the Keyblade.
Mm-hmm.
And, up until this point in the game, you believe that only Sora can be the one that has the Keyblade.
Yeah.
And you find out that there are two Keyblades. And there's... I'm going to spoil a little bit more. There's a lot more than that in the other games.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all the logistics of it. I don't remember. But you will all hear it as I play through the series.
It'll be a good time.
It's going to be a lot of fun. But so, Riku also has a Keyblade. Or Ansem Riku, what's his face? We'll just call him Ransom.
Yeah.
Because Riku's... captive, it's a ransom. It works. That's really cheesy. I'm not filing it.
Ransom.
Yeah. So Ransom has a Keyblade that unlocks things, and Sora has a Keyblade that locks things.
Yes.
So Sora takes Ransom's Keyblade. I can't say with a straight face. Riku Ansem's Keyblade, and unlocks his heart so Kairi can have hers back.
Yeah, that moment's really interesting.
But that turns him into a heartless.
Yep.
Then Ransom comes back and he's about to kill Kairi and Donald and Goofy, but Riku's able to regain a little bit of control of himself and hold him back. So they have to escape Hollow Bastion. Now, right before they escape, that's when you come in again.
Yeah, as a Heartless.
You get to control Sora as a Heartless.
Yeah, and at first, I was really frustrated because I just redid this. And I'm like, how do I get down the lifts? I can't activate the lifts. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. We just jump over the edge. Heartless suicide. Literally, you just keep on jumping over the edge of the castle.
It's pretty awesome.
Until you get to the bottom.
That confused me. I'm like, I hope I don't die. I don't want to waste all this time.
Yeah, because if we had to redo that whole fight with Riku...
F that.
I would have hurt somebody...
Probably your husband.
Steven would have been the victim of domestic violence.
But then you come back down as a Heartless, and Kairi is there, and she brings you back somehow.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm not really sure how that happened.
I mean, I guess the idea is that Sora's heart wasn't that far gone, so since he could still kind of control his Heartless, then Kairi could, like, bring it back. I don't know.
There's also a lot of other theories.
In all honesty, you know how you could clarify all this? The power of friendship.
Like my dad always said, friendship.
It's the power of friendship. That's the only way I could understand this.
Yeah. I feel like there probably are a couple other ways that you could explain it. But we can talk about that later on in the series.
Good. I feel bad. We're like, well, we could say... But that's later. To full disclaimer, a lot of this theories was really retconned. Like, it was definitely not meant to be as complicated as it was. But because the first one was just complicated enough, they could retcon enough to, like, make it work.
I mean, they've added, like, 5 more games, so they keep adding to the story and everything.
I really don't know what Tetsuya Nomura is like. Like, what his overarching plan.
I don't know where they're going with this now, and I've even played the newest installment, 2.8, and I am still so confused.
Like, I'm excited to get there, though.
Definitely play that. Definitely watch back Cover, which is a little animated movie.
That'll be cool.
It's very interesting. It's very weird. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So like I said, I'm thinking about all of this stuff from the new games in with the old games and trying to figure out what they intended from the beginning and what they didn't.
And what they changed. And I just don't know. So then after she brings you back, you go back to Traverse Town. You get a new kind of navigation gummy block for your gummy ship. By the way, we didn't talk about this much, but I hate the gummy ship.
Gummy
sections.
Ships are the worst. I tried to change mine.
The gummy ship is literally just the ship that you use to travel across worlds, and it's made out of gummies, because why not? But you get a new navigation piece for it, so you can go back to Hollow Bastion, because right now it's blocked off because of all the dark magic. All the Heartless and the darkness and everything.
Yeah, all the worlds are now being, like, overrun, because when you freed Kairi's heart, you also opened the door to darkness, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why all of the worlds are being overrun, which was interesting.
So you go back to... Once you do that and you go back to Hollow Bastion, then you fight the Behemoth, who's kind of the boss of that world, even though you've already fought Maleficent in 2 forms, Riku in 1 form, and then the Behemoth. So it took 4 bosses just to beat that world, technically.
Yeah, too many. But what did we expect from Final Fantasy.
From Final Fantasy and Squarian and Squeenix.
Yep.
Then you seal that world, and that finally unlocks the end of all... I forget what's it called.
It's the end of worlds.
The end of worlds. I love the end of worlds. I think it's a really fun place to explore.
It's a really interesting concept. Tough. It's so tough. Those little angel things with their wings that, like, ball up
on each other. They're called I forget what those are called. The other guys that I hate are the giant demons with the giant swords
that
fly.
They are
a pain. They're called Invisibles. I forget what the little, like, it almost looks like salt shakers with wings.
It's angel something, I feel like.
Something like that.
But maybe I'm wrong.
But you kind of, you go to this world, and I really can't describe it. Like, I don't even want to describe it. Just look up videos or screenshots of it, because it's a really cool, like, really interesting and, like, magically designed kind of, like, world. I really like that.
I really enjoyed the part, because I had never gotten that far. I know I had started in the End of Worlds, but I had never gotten as far where you have to keep going, like, through the flames, and that takes you, like, to the heart of each world that you have visited, and you have to beat more Heartless there. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, was super interesting.
I really like that.
That was a cool thing.
And it gives you a lot of extra experience, almost like a prep. That it's like was, an easy amount of extra
experience. I feel like experience. A lot of the battles they had in this game were just prepping you for that the final next fight. Like, the final fight has a bunch of battles that are just prepping you for later on. Like, when you have to get Donald and Goofy back with your final fight with Ansem.
Let's just talk about that final fight, because it's pretty much, like, all you're doing is just progressing and fighting more and more enemies just to get to the final boss, which is Ansem.
Where they just keep coming.
Did you ever count how many forms of Ansem there are?
I didn't count them.
You have one with you, Donald, and Goofy on the beach at Destiny's Island. Yep. Then you have one with just you and him, as just Sora and him. And then you have another one with just Sora and him, but in a different form. Like, it's like a big demon guy. The big demon ship. Now, no, it's not the demon ship yet. We haven't even gotten there. So you have Donald, Goofy, and Sora versus Ansem in his human form with the weird demon thing on his back. Then you have just Sora fighting Ansem with the weird demon thing on his back. And that, I would argue, is the toughest part of the boss fight.
Yeah, it really is.
It's really aggravating.
That's the only one I had to restart.
Because every form of this, by the way, well, not every form, but the first two forms have, like, four or five health bars apiece.
They are rough.
So you have to go through, like, four or five health bars. I'm blanking on which number it is, but we'll just say four and round down. Either way, four health bars is a lot.
It's a lot.
Four health bars with Donald and Goofy to help you and to heal you. Then four health bars where they're not there to heal you, and you have to do it solo. Then you have to fight a giant version with almost like the first boss of the entire game. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really big.
A little more HP.
He's still not too difficult. Then you go to that weird demon ship thing, and you fight Ansem out there, but you're solo again, and once again, he's got four or five health bars.
And it's really annoying, because he summons, like, the little spinning orbs that shoot lasers at you, and you cannot dodge them. Like, all I did was,
you have
like,
to,
fly
you
around
have to fly, for, you can, yeah, you can't
for
do
5 minutes,
anything.
And, it's like,
and then you go in, get five more hits, and then do it again. So it's more tedious than difficult.
It was so tedious. Like, when I finished it, I was really like, that's it? Are you sure there isn't, like, another form? But then he's like, Kingdom Hearts. And it's like, oh, it is over. Okay.
But, well, that's not even the end yet.
Oh, yeah.
So you beat him by yourself when he's shooting all those lasers.
And then he goes into, like, a
coma. Then he goes into, like, a cocoon almost.
Yeah.
And then you have to fight his ship.
Yep.
And each ship has, like, the ship has, like, a couple sections where basically you kill, like, these... Honestly, they look like dildos.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, look at the little dicks on the ship.
And they just flap around. You gotta kill them. And then... So you kill them, and then you basically take off, like, an energy shield. And then the mouth of the front of it starts attacking you, and that's got, like, two health bars and is a pain.
Yeah, and I think in between those, you go into,
like a zone,
the world of darkness and...
fight and rescue Donald
and
Goofy.
First you rescue Goofy, and you can get lots of things that'll heal your... that heal you.
Yeah.
You also get some mega ethers, I think.
And then you go, and then you fight the ship's face.
Yep.
I never thought I'd use that in a sentence.
That is a weird thing to say, but you just beat on the ship's face.
Until its mouth opens, and then you fly into its world of darkness. And then you fight that, and you rescue Donald. The order could be out of place, but either way, you're fighting parts of
it's
the
all
ship.
A blur.
Going into the world of darkness and rescuing one of your friends.
Mm-hmm.
So when you finally can get the last thing, you have rescued both of them, you kind of fight the heart of this, like, weird demon ship, which is
easy.
It's really easy.
I just went right to that.
You can take out out the dildos on the side, and then you can fight the weird stomach looking thing.
Yeah,
and then you fight Ansem again, and this is finally the final fight. So if you count it all, you have human form with Donald and Goofy and Sora, human form with just Sora, weird giant demon thing, then demon ship version of Ansem with Sora solo. Then all the layers of the demon ship, and if you count the face, then that's an additional one, but we're only going to count all the different layers because you go into the worlds of darkness. And then you finally fight the final form. So you have six forms of the final boss. Six so different many. Things you have to do
no
to
beat they the final cut boss. Cut out Xehanort in two.
Who's Xehanort?
Oh no, I don't know who Xehanort is.
But anyway, so come on, Sarah. Spoilers.
I'm sorry. We'll find. It's been 15 years.
Yeah, no. You'll find out who Xehanort is when we play Kingdom Hearts 2. So then you finally beat Ansem, and then you can close the door to Kingdom Hearts. And on the other side, you see Riku, and that's where you finally see King Mickey. And so as they close the door, Riku and Mickey on one side, Sora, Donald, and Goofy, and Kairi, who randomly shows up on another. Yeah. Kairi goes off to her world. Sora, Donald, Goofy kind of goes off on their own path. And then Riku and Mickey go off on theirs into the world of darkness.
Yeah, that was always interesting because, you know, we had to shut the door. Sora didn't seem to show too much hesitation about locking Riku in there, though.
You piece of shit, you try to kill me!
Yeah, that's interesting. And his final... take care of her. And Sora's like, haha, nope. That's not what the series is about anymore.
Nope, not at all. Well, at least I don't remember. It's now just pretty much just... Yeah, I don't know what it's about anymore.
It's about finding Riku in the second game.
That's what it is.
And in Chain of Memories for a little while.
So, that's pretty much the story.
Yeah.
So let's kind of move on. Now, that was a very long explanation of the story, but the story's really good in all honesty.
It's a really good story. It's a really long story.
Now, we talked about the story. The gameplay is pretty much... Maybe we should have said this first, but the story is always what fascinates me more, personally.
Yeah.
It's an action RPG.
Yeah.
It's, you get different items to, like, equip to your characters, and they can get level up. You level up, of course. By the more heartless you fight, you get experience for that. I love that you see the experience amounts, too.
I do like that you can see the experience amount. What I do wish, and they added this for Kingdom Hearts 2, is that after you accumulate some experience, they'll show you how much more you need
to level up.
And I really like that feature.
Well, you can do that in 1, but you have to hit start, go to status, and
it shows
that.
Yeah, it just takes a long time. For Kingdom Hearts 2, it just, boop,
right
shows
there.
Up.
And you can get different items, like you have different accessories, and you get different versions of the Keyblades that are more powerful. I beat the game with Divine Rose.
That's what I did too. I completely forgot about it. I just talked to Belle randomly in Hollow Bastion, and she gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh neat, this is better than Oblivion, so we're gonna use that.
I just beat, and we'll go into this when we talk about the side quests. I mean, I don't have all the side quests memorized right now, but... I beat the Hades Cup recently.
Nice.
And the Keyblades you get from that aren't as good as Divine Rose.
Which ones do you get from that?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But you get a couple. But yeah, so that's pretty much the combat. It's an action RPG. It's all real time since it is an action RPG. There's a quick select menu for magic, so you can do it quickly instead of having to go down on the menu in the middle of battle, find your spell, select who you want to cast it onto, that kind of thing. You use items like potions and ethers and Phoenix Downs and all the normal Final Fantasy items you're used to.
Yep.
So yeah, do you have anything else to say about the game to play? I mean, there's really...
We kind of covered the basics. You've got your magic, you've got... What I did like about this one is that to open chests, it's the triangle button and not the X button, which they change later in the games. In certain games. It goes back and forth. It's really weird.
I just like being able to hit triangle. It's easier.
I think in Dream Drop Distance, it's the X button, and that makes it really annoying because I'm trying to open chests and I'm just jumping. It's kind of like in Final Fantasy XV,
yeah.
Where your interact button and your jump button is the same button, and you're trying to talk to someone and you're just jumping at
just
them.
Imagine what it'd be like if it was a real life person. Like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just trying to talk to you. Leave me alone. Side quests, then. We kind of talked a little bit about it when I was mentioning the Hades Cup, but there's a lot of side quests in this game.
Yeah.
Just to name a few, the Trinities, the 101 Dalmatians, you have all the journal entries. You can find all the mini-games. There's a lot of mini-games you can choose from. There's hidden bosses. There's various tournaments in Hercules' world that you can choose from. Do any of them stick out to you at all?
I kind of enjoyed doing... the Trinities. I couldn't find all of them, but it was fun going back to certain worlds and being like, oh, hey, I can get that now.
I just got all the Trinities 2 days ago.
I have never really been a completionist. I finally reached that point in my life. But for Kingdom Hearts 1, I'm kind of like, let's just beat the story and move on.
Well, like, the bosses are tough. Like, if you're trying to be a completionist, with the hidden bosses are really tough. Because if you beat, so you have, with all the, for example, the tournaments, you have the Phil Cup, which is part of the story you have to beat it to do the Hercules world. You have the, then, Pegasus Cup, then the Hercules Cup, which is the, how you beat Hercules world.
Apparently I beat those two.
Then you have Hades Cup, which is optional.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Question Mark Cup, which I haven't checked yet.
Cool things out of the Hades Cup. Like you do. I think you get Thundaga from that one, and I really wanted that, but I also couldn't make it that far.
You get an Ansem Journal entry. Also, that's when you finally beat Hades as well.
That's true.
Is in the Hades Cup, even though you don't really need to. Then there's an optional tournament. It just says question marks. So you don't even really know the title of it.
Yeah, that's where you fight Sephiroth, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And who's voiced by Lance Bass from NSYNC.
Nice.
Which is really weird. And then there's a bunch of other hidden bosses, which... an interesting little bit. I don't know if I wrote this down. Give me like 2 seconds. There was. I'm sorry, everybody. I know I wrote this down here somewhere. Yeah. So one of the hidden bosses is named after. It came from a contest. 2 months before it was released, Square Enix held a promotional contest that was exclusive to the U.S. The winner would have their name used in the game. And the winner was a guy from New York named Kurt Zisa. And his name was used for the hidden six-armed boss in Agrabah. Or in the Agrabah world, in Aladdin. It's in the desert. If you go out to where the Cave of Wonders is, it's something like that. I believe, or as you're flying out, he appears. And he's really tough. I don't know if I ever beat him.
I don't think I've ever fought him. I guess it is interesting to note that we are playing 1.5, which is the final mix.
No, it's something I did notice. 1.5 is... I'm sure there's other differences, but the original game on the PS2, there you could choose what time of day you're starting at. You know, morning, midday, and night. Do you remember that by any chance?
Was that one of the questions that they ask you in the beginning?
It was, but they don't do it in 1.5.
I could never figure out...
I literally beat it, like... you know, in a week, and I don't remember them ever asking that. I do remember that happening, though. And that the way what that question did is it affected how your experience would go. So, like, if you started midday, it was even throughout. If it was morning, you would basically, or something like, it was something like that. It was like midday, it was an even amount of experience throughout to level up. As if it was morning, then it was really easy to level up in the beginning, and you level up really fast, but then towards the latter half of the game, it was next level impossible to level up because it just kept growing. If you started in the evening, you wouldn't level up a lot in the beginning, but as you got to higher levels, the amount of experience would not necessarily decrease, but it would essentially get smaller, so it would be easier to level up in higher ones.
This could be where I messed up. I was wondering why it felt like leveling up was taking a long time.
You might have chosen the morning, but at the same time, I don't know if they changed that for 1.5. Someone correct us. That'll be fine.
Yeah, do it.
I want to know, because I don't really know the differences between the two. We played the 1.5 version, though.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to talk about the side quests or anything like that?
They're synthesizing. Synthesizing's
pretty interesting. Oh my god, I forgot all about that. With the Moogles.
Yeah, Moogles. They had to find a way to put those in this series.
It's Final Fantasy, you have to have Moogles.
There's always Moogles. But so you can try to hunt down every single item in the game to synthesize everything and eventually find the recipe for the Ultima Keyblade.
Is that how you get that?
Yep, I think it is.
I think so, too. I know you have to get a lot of the rare, like the Rocha column or whatever it is, and then Dark Matter or Calcum, and then Dark Matter, and a bunch of others. You get Gales from those weird invisible dudes. I know those are rare crafting items.
Oh, yeah, I got a bunch of those.
But, like, it's really hard. I was actually Googling around online to see, like, what's the best way to do this, and they told you, like, this world gives you the highest chance of getting this specific item, fights, and so on and so forth. But it's tough to do that.
I had one of those printed... I had a book. It was a guide. And I think I had one for Kingdom Hearts 1. I know I have it for Kingdom Hearts 2. Like, I have it in my house.
I should look it up, because, like, I've beaten it without a guide already.
Yeah.
I would love to go through with a guide and try to get all the different... Like, I mean, I can go back whenever I want to do it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the fun thing about post-game in games, is going back and getting all the stuff.
You know it's a good RPG when it doesn't, when you can go back to do stuff that you missed.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Because there's always too much stuff to do.
And Square is definitely one of the best ones for post-game content.
Alright, so I guess, I mean, do you have anything left to talk about with, like, in terms of gameplay, side quests, or story? Because what I wanted to move on to was just talking about the voice actors a little bit, and just some interesting side bits. So, like I said earlier in this podcast, this game had a crazy pedigree, like a really high pedigree of people who are working in it. Haley Joel Osment, famous for The Sixth Sense, was the voice of Sora, and Secondhand Lion. Sixth Sense and Secondhand Lion. So I would say those are two of his biggest ones.
Secondhand Lion was a good movie.
It's a really good movie.
Steven made me watch that, and that was very good.
It's a really good movie.
He's also in AI, which is a really weird... I think it's a Spielberg movie.
It's an animated one, right?
No. AI is...
Oh, no, I'm thinking something else.
It's a weird
I'm thinking
one.
Of Titan AE for some reason. But he's also into my personal favorite. For those who don't know, I am a Kevin Smith fan. I know that's polarizing, but whatever. You can go, who cares? And Tusk and Yoga Hosers, and he's ridiculous in both.
He just enjoys playing, or at least before he grew up, he was really good at playing small, creepy children.
Yeah.
And I think Sora could possibly fit
creepy.
In there.
He's a little creepy. David Gallagher was Riku, like we said before. He was famous from Seventh Heaven.
Yeah.
He obviously has a lot more, but I just picked something that stuck out to me, so I apologize if I missed something
Seventh
big.
Seventh Heaven's something we kind of grew up with. I never watched it. Me neither. My mom
never watched it.
But it was on TV when we were.
But like I said, also Hayden Panettiere. I apologize if I butchered her name as well. She was the daughter of Coach Yost, or Yoster, from whatever, from Remember the Titans. She was also in the Bring It On movies. Billy Zane is the voice of Ansem. He's famous from Twin Peaks, and I know he's referenced in a lot of stuff, but he plays himself in Zoolander and stuff like that.
I really liked his voice. As I was playing, I'm like, this guy's got
a good voice.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
It's got a voice for radio right there. David Boreanaz, who's Squall / Leon, famous for Angel, Buffy, Bones... Like, he's a really big actor, and he was in this. I was surprised to see his name attached to this.
See, this is funnier for me now, because I didn't know who he was when I played this game, but now I know him, and so it's funny now.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Mandy Moore, of all people, is the voice of Aerith. She's a singer, but also famous for A Walk to Remember, and personally for me, she has a couple episodes in Scrubs. That's what I like her the most in. Steve Burden is the voice of Cloud Strife. He's famous for a lot of soap operas. The Young and the Restless, General Hospital, that kind of thing.
Yeah, my mom would know him.
Christy Carlson Romano, famous for Even Stevens and Kim Possible.
Oh.
She's the voice of Kim Possible.
Okay.
She was the voice of Yuffie Kisagara, one of, you know, Leon / Squall's group.
Yep.
Dee Bradley Baker is the voice of Waka. He's... everywhere. The thing that stuck out to me and all 90s kids, he's the voice of Olmec from Legends of the Hidden Temple. I did not know that before I did this, and it blew my mind. But he's in Space Jam, and it would take me forever to list everything that he's been in.
A
side note about him, since he did voice Waka, the thing that blew my mind, Waka is a character from Final Fantasy X who was originally voiced by John DiMaggio, who's famous for Bender from Futurama, as well as Jake from Adventure Time. And God knows there's tons of others for him, too.
That's
a side note, but that just blew my mind. We mentioned Lance Bass from Sephiroth. He's from NSYNC. Sean Astin was Hercules.
I saw that on your list, and I was like, that can't be right. That can't be Sean Astin.
No, it is. Famous for Rudy and Lord of the Rings. And
Sean Astin's super cool, and he does some really interesting things.
What else do you know him from?
I know him from some British movies based on a book series. So
okay.
He's super cool in that.
What book series?
Terry Pratchett, The Color of Magic.
Okay.
He's Two Flower in The Color of Magic.
Oh, I don't know. I never read the book. That, by the way, is Sarah's husband, Steve. He's just been creepily staring at us the whole time in the background, but he's
as
cool.
As I could manage.
And it's off-putting us, but, you know, it's cool. We persevere.
So if you hear the fear in our voice.
We're so scared. And then Dan Castellaneta, I can't pronounce his name, as Genie. He's famous for The Simpsons. Oh. He's the voice of Homer, I believe. Okay. I'm pretty sure. I did this literally like 2 episodes ago on the podcast. I'm like, oh, he's, you know, famous for something. Now, it's a little bit of Disney royalty. I did not go through all this because the voice acting credits for this list was gigantic. But
I actually have a few interesting tips for this, so continue.
All right. So, Wayne Allen, or Allwine, I'm sorry, is the voice of Mickey Mouse. He has been the voice of Mickey Mouse for a while now. Not the original. That was, of course, Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something interesting to note. Tony Anselmo... Anselmo, whatever, was the voice of Donald Duck. He has been the voice of Donald Duck for Disney for a while now. This one, I think, is particularly interesting. Yeah, would you like to talk about this
one? Yeah, this one's Catherine Beaumont. She was the voice of Alice. Beaumont? My bad.
Yeah.
Beaumont. So anyway, she was the voice of Alice, and she was actually the original voice of Alice when it came out.
She was only 13 years old when Alice in Wonderland came out. And she reprised her role for this game. She was 13 when the movie came out. She was 64 when the movie, or I'm sorry, when the game came out. So
yeah,
just do that math. That's a 51-year gap right there.
The fact that she still sounds 13 is insane.
It's crazy. It's even crazier. I didn't know. I mean, I'm not surprised by this, but she's British. I saw a video of her at like because what Disney used to do, which I'm not as well versed in this as some other people are, so I apologize for people like, he's stupid, how do you not know this? But I didn't know that Disney used to basically, when their voice actors, they would actually physically act out the scenes so their animators would have a frame of reference.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know why I didn't know that. I feel like it's something I should have. But I found a video of her doing a scene as Alice, like when she was 13 years old, and she introduced it, and then it's when I saw she was British. I'm like, oh. I mean, I guess it makes sense because isn't Alice British in the movie too?
Yes, I believe she is.
Lewis Carroll's British.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense. So then, Corey Burton, Jodie Benson as Ariel, famous for The Little Mermaid. Yep. She is the original voice.
She was another one who did the acting out for a frame.
Mm-hmm. And then Robbie Benson as Beast. He's also the original voice of Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
Are they related?
I don't know. I was thinking about Googling that, but I'm like, it's like 12. It's like midnight, and I'm tired, so I didn't do it.
I'm gonna Google that when we're done.
And then Pat Carroll as Ursula, who is also the original voice of Ursula.
Wow.
Corey Burton as Captain Hook, who is not the original voice of Captain Hook. But he's been voicing Captain Hook and many others for a ton of Disney shows. And the last one I thought was interesting was Scott Wenger, who was Aladdin. He was the original voice of Aladdin, but for all you Full House fans, he's Steve from Full House. Candace Cameron Bure's, I'm blanking on her character's name, but Candace Cameron Bure's character's her boyfriend from the original show and now, like, love triangle thing in the new one.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, you haven't seen the new Fuller
House.
The old one. You said you had. Was there anything? Were you talking about the Catherine Beaumont thing, or was there anything else that you?
Yeah, there was that one. I think you got everything with Wayne Allwine. I know that they dedicated 358 over 2 days to him because he had died right before that.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's really cool. I didn't know that because I haven't played it yet, but.
That's a good game. I really liked that game.
I've heard it ties a lot of the loose ends of the stories together.
Definitely ties a lot of stories for 1 and 2.
Okay.
That first arc, can kind of put it like that.
So, I guess something that might be interesting to talk about, even though we're not going to go into detail with it, the timeline of this series. The
timeline is really interesting.
So, if you go by chronologically, not of release date, I'm not talking about that chronologically, but story chronology.
Yeah.
Birth by Sleep is the first one,
yes,
right?
Yes, it takes place 10 years before the events of Kingdom Hearts 1.
Then, and we'll talk about 358/2, but yeah. Then you have Kingdom Hearts 1, Chain of Memories, Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah.
Now, Recoded apparently happens after that. It's a DS game.
Yeah,
but I never then finished it. The 358/2 days happens sometime in the middle of Birth by Sleep all the way up to in the middle of... Sorry, you're right. The middle of Kingdom Hearts, right?
It's in between in between kind of the end of Kingdom Hearts and kind of spans between that and Chain of Memories, and then ends right when 2 starts.
Okay. I thought, I was also told it goes at like halfway through 2. Could I be wrong with that?
I don't think it goes through 2.
Okay.
Because when it ends,
but it's all, 2 starts. But it's all like side stories of like other perspectives of while those events are still all happening. Yeah, out. So it's not like you're replaying it from a different angle. It's like...
Yeah, you're playing as a different character, and pretty much everything about it is different. Like, it's got some really interesting mechanics that they never use again.
No, I'm curious to try it out then.
Yeah, because you get to customize your Keyblade, like, as you continue through the game.
Oh, that's really cool.
You get pieces, and as you put those pieces, like, on your grid, it changes your Keyblade.
That's awesome.
I don't think they used...
That's 358/2?
Yes. I don't think they used it for Recoded, but I played my brother's copy of Recoded, and honestly, it wasn't as interesting.
Well, Recoded, probably the reason for that is that that was originally a cell phone game in Japan only.
Another one of those cell phone games.
And it was episodic for cell phones, and since it didn't come out in the U.S., they wanted to release in the U.S., so they made it into a DS
title. It was nice of them, it just wasn't interesting.
Now, where does Dream Drop Distance fall in? Is that after Recoded slash 2?
Takes place after 2. It takes place kind of in between 2 and 3.
And then 2.8, I guess, is 2. After 8, Dream Drop Distance.
Yeah.
And then, or I guess sometime in that...
2.8's interesting because it has Dream Drop Distance in it, which takes place after 2.
Mm-hmm.
But it has another, that point 2, the fragmentary passage, which takes place right after Birth by Sleep.
It's confusing me.
It's
very
confusing.
So,
it literally
for those
goes
who don't know,
back to the beginning and the end.
Then,
it's like a bookmark for the whole
so
series.
So weird. So, for those who don't know, about a couple months ago, actually, Square released Kingdom Hearts 2.8. And basically all it is, it's an HD remake of the 3DS game Dream Drop Distance. And then it also adds its own little game to it that's supposed to prepare you for Kingdom Hearts 3, and it has a little cinematic part.
Definitely
like a little movie too.
Makes you excited for it because it just looks so good. Because
they do it in Unreal.
It's made in Unreal
Engine 4.
Engine 4, yes.
And actually, kind of to tie it back to Kingdom Hearts 1.
All right.
Kingdom Hearts 1, all the engine they used for it, well, not really, I guess I shouldn't talk about the engine, but they lost all the files for that game.
I don't know how you lose that many files.
I mean, all the art assets and everything. So when they made the HD remake 1.5, they had to do it all from scratch.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, that's fascinating to me. That's crazy they put that much work to be able to make an HD remake of the game. It looks really good.
It looks really good, but it's really funny playing, like, the Dream Drop Distance remake after playing Point 2, because I wanted to play Point 2 first, and it's just... It doesn't look as good as Point 2. Point 2 looks so good.
It's got
a whole different, the back cover, which kind of ties in with the phone game, Kingdom Hearts X.
Oh, the one that just came out somewhere recently.
Unchained,
yes.
And that's really weird. I lost interest in Unchained pretty quickly.
Is there any storyline involved with
there
that?
There is
doing...
actually kind of a storyline involved, but I didn't really get into it
Google
very
that,
much.
Then.
Just Google it. Just watch the, watch back cover, because that actually kind of explains the story of Unchained and why you can pick a faction to join in the game. And it's really interesting. That takes place way before Birth by Sleep.
For those who are following along... Storyline's fucking confusing.
Oh, and back cover made it worse.
But I'm excited to dive in and figure it all out.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, are there any final, like, I guess to just to kind of wrap it up, do you have any like final thoughts on this, on the game? Well, we're going to be talking about the whole series, any thoughts on Kingdom Hearts 1 at all? Like for me, it kind of what got me into the series. Like I like to talk about nostalgia a lot on this podcast. I apologize for those who've heard that a million times. And I apologize for apologizing all the time. Go fuck yourselves. I'm always doing this.
Apologize.
I know, right? But this game series meant a lot to me because it was, I remember being blown away by how deep the story was for something that I'm like, this doesn't seem like a Disney thing, but at the same time, it feels like a Disney thing.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts definitely had a huge impact on me. I still get a little teary-eyed when I hear the music. I even got my piano teacher to let me learn music from the series.
Really?
Yeah, I remember in high school I learned Hikari. That was really hard. That one was hard.
What did your piano teacher think of it?
She thought it was really interesting. She was super cool. She let us bring in all sorts of weeb music. It was great.
That was awesome.
Catherine was always bringing it. My sister was always bringing in Joe Hisaishi
music. Oh, from Hayao Miyazaki movies, yeah.
Yeah, she loved that. So
I love that music.
And she would have Chinese students who would bring her back music, and she'd be like, do you want to learn this? Do you want to learn that? So we learned a ton of Korean composers' music.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was great.
But, alright, so yeah. I guess just to kind of wrap it up, the game means a lot to both of us.
Oh yeah, this game really set the bar of what I enjoy as far as console games, and honestly, even their handheld games.
And RPGs, maybe.
RPGs, yeah, because this was really probably my first console RPG that I had really played, mm-hmm. So...
All right. Well, thank you for joining me today, Sarah. It was a lot of fun talking about this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I hope to have you back for all the other Kingdom Hearts stuff.
Definitely.
And all right, guys. So you can follow all the times that I do post very seldomly, but on Twitter @StillLoadingPod, on Facebook also @StillLoadingPod. So you feel free to contact me there, and please rate, review, and subscribe this, so that way it gets the word out and it gives me feedback, because I'm always looking for, you know, any kind of feedback to make this more interesting and more fun for you guys to listen to. So thank you all for listening, and I'll see you next time.
So long.
Thank you.